You're listening to the Deal Farm Podcast with Ken Corsini. Educating, inspiring, and connecting you to real estate deals. And now, your host, Ken Corsini.
Hey, this is Ken Corsini with the Deal Farm. On today's Best Deal Ever episode, I've got Steve Carlson out of San Antonio. Steve, how you doing?
Hey, Ken, I'm doing great. Always good to talk with you, man.
Yeah, you as well. I appreciate you coming on the show.
My pleasure.
So, Steve, I appreciate it. A guest that actually listens to the show. That's a new thing. Fantastic. So Steve actually is another fellow member of the Collective Genius, and he is out of San Antonio. The name of his business is Solution House Buyers. And I like your business model a lot. It's not too far off from ours, but I like the fact that your business model really concentrates on the buy and hold, not just the fix and flip. And it seems like you've struck a really good balance between building a strong portfolio of houses that are cash flowing, but also, you know, paying the bills, doing 30, 35 deals per year as well.
Yes.
So
yes.
I'd love to maybe just take us back. How did you get into real estate? Where did you get your start?
Well, I graduated from college in 1990, take it back to then. And my first 6 months on the job, one of my boss actually told me, he said, Steve, you don't calm down. You're gonna have a nervous breakdown. So here I'm 6 months into an engineering career, and I'm about to have a nervous breakdown because of the stress and the pressure.
Wow.
And one of my cube mates gave me a book called The Magic of Thinking Big. And man, it was if you haven't read it, you should. But there's a lot of real estate undertones in the wealth side of The Magic of Thinking Big. And that led me to read some other books. And finally, in 1992, I bought my first house. But I didn't do much in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of got sidetracked. You know, you get into real estate and you think, oh, there's opportunities galore. And I start thinking I'm an entrepreneur. And I just didn't have any focus until about 1998.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really when I really got motivated on the real estate side of things. And so I was doing 5 or 10 flips and holds per year, part time.
Oh, wow. So were you still working an engineering job?
I was, yeah.
Okay.
It took me a long, long time to get rid of that job. But, I had a great scenario. You know, I'd work in the morning a little bit on my business. Mm-hmm. I'd work at lunch a lot on my business. And then after work for an hour on my business. And then after the family went to bed, I'd work until midnight on the business. So,
wow.
Yeah. So we had a reasonable balance of family and business, but it was burning the candles at both ends, man, for a long time.
So, yeah, you're working a full-time job as an engineer, then every extra second during the day, you're flipping houses on the side?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I had a good boss. There are several good bosses, put it that way.
Yeah, and they understood what you were doing.
And I was busy.
5 to 10 flips on the side, that's a lot. I mean, because that's a lot of time and effort into those.
It really is. It was a lot. So I learned to outsource everything.
Okay.
I was really, really good at outsourcing stuff and still pretty good at it. I don't have a big enough team, but I have a lot of support outsource people that I use. And so I just, you know, I like the set it and forget it kind of thing.
Sure. So were any of those virtual assistants back in the 90s, or was it all just local guys you were contracting stuff to?
It was local folks, and marketing people that I could press a button and they would just take care of stuff. And my realtors, I just call a realtor, say, hey, we're ready to list it. And they took it, you know, all the way down to the finish line without me having to be involved hardly.
Nice.
You know, I spend my time talking with sellers and managing contractors for the most part.
So back in the 90s, how were you finding your deals?
Yeah, good question. There was hardly any internet. You know, 98 is when the internet started booming, kind of.
Sure.
So I was finding deals still back the old fashioned way. Ads in the newspapers, billboards. I did some bandit signs, but I tell you what I liked the most and more than anything was driving for dollars.
Really?
That is really where the deals came from, was driving for dollars.
So what does that look? What did that look like then? What does it look like now? Just out of curiosity.
Same exact thing. I'd take off at lunch and go drive a neighborhood where I wanted to buy houses, and I'd just go mark down the addresses that had high weeds and trashy yards and houses needed painting severely, I just mark them down, send them a postcard, just old-fashioned direct mail thing.
Really? Would you do any more espionage to figure out where they live and what they're doing?
Nah, we just go to the county records, either website, or go down to the county recorder's office and get a mailing address and send them a postcard.
Okay.
Simple stuff. Nothing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it is one of those things. You just boots on the ground. It does work.
It absolutely works, and it's something we're going to implement this year again because it works. And not a lot of people are doing it.
You know, I've thought – it's funny because I've wrestled with that myself, is just hiring one or two guys, hourly guys, and send them into neighborhoods, let them map them out, and just exactly that. Look for the distressed properties, and then a little bit of research. You can get phone numbers nowadays and email addresses and mailing addresses and really blitz those people.
Yeah. I think it's a great tactic, so don't tell anybody on your podcast.
Yep, that's top secret for everybody that's listening. Top secret. All five of you guys that are listening. Don't tell anybody.
Yeah, so that's how we did it then, and it worked out great for us. We had a good time. I actually found private lenders doing that too.
Funny. Really? Finding deals that way?
Well, finding deals that led to private lenders.
Okay.
Off of my newspaper ads and. Newspaper ads are driving for dollars or whatever it was that I was doing. I mean, a couple of private lenders that I started using in 2001, I still use today in 2016.
Yeah. I think these are guys that you just sort of tripped over, in the course of looking for houses.
And sure is.
They were happened to be in the business as well. And,
the
capital.
One of these guys that's a lender is also one of my mentors, one of the richest guys I know. And it kind of follows a pattern. Some of the richest guys I know, what they did, bought a lot of houses, paid them off with bank financing or whatever, and then sold them with owner financing.
Some
of the wealthiest guys I know have huge portfolios of owner financed homes. And both of them are great mentors of mine today. And that's how they did it. So that's kind of, I'm trying to model their strategy as well.
Interesting. Well, so take us into what your model, evolved to and what it looks like now. So in 98, you were part-time.
I was part-time. And, I was flipping houses. And we'd make $10,000, $15,000, $25,000 a pop. And granted, I grew up in a small town. 20,000 people, 25,000 people was my backyard. So I didn't have big deals. So if we made $25,000 on a deal, that was a good flip for us.
Sure.
And it still is today, honestly.
Yeah, we'll take $25,000 net on a flip any day.
Absolutely. So, but you know what I realized, Ken, is it didn't take me long to figure out that this is just another job.
Yeah, right.
You make those $20,000, and I was building a house at the time, so I'd chunk all that money into this house we were building, and gosh darn it, if I didn't realize I needed some passive income, so we started buying some rentals. And they were all leveraged with either private individuals or banks, most of them private lenders. But then I started realizing, gosh, these leveraged rental properties aren't making a lot of money. Mm. And the cash flow on them is pretty slim. So I got to have a ton of them. And that's about the time I ran into my two mentors that owner finance stuff. So I started owner financing houses. And if you look at the numbers on those owner finance deals, even if they're leveraged, they're gonna net 2 to 3 times what a leveraged rental would net. So
that's a really interesting statistic, that the deals that you could be renting that you decide to owner finance instead, you feel like you're getting 2 to 3 times higher returns on those owner finance deals than on rentals.
On average, it's a little over 2 times.
Wow. So let's break that down. Why do you think that is? Is that because you're getting more, or because you're not having to do maintenance and repairs, or what's the main factors behind that?
That's a great question. Let's go into some of these details. First of all, the stuff that we own or finance is the really, really cheap stuff. And for the most part, right?
Okay. So
the houses, I love rental. Well, I love the owner finance stuff for cash flow. I love rentals for long-term wealth and exit.
Yep.
I love flips for the big chunks of cash now, so I can go buy motorhome or have a big vacation or whatever. I like but the little ones that are real easy to pick up, and buy them for $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, and we sell them for about twice what we buy them for. So if I'm buying a house for $30,000, I can generally sell that for about $60,000 on payments. So if you look at those margins, they're phenomenal.
Yeah, I got you.
So that's how we can cash flow. I mean, I'm looking at this one that we bought on Bradford Street on my screen. Obviously, you can't see it, but we paid $34,500 for it. Put $2,500 into it.
Okay.
Is pretty typical for an owner finance thing. And then we sold it for $74,000.
Wow.
We only got $4,000 down, really small down payment, but the cash flow is $672 for my buyer. So they're paying me $672 a month. My lender, I'm paying him $375, which is a little high, but it's on a 15-year amortization. So I'm going to have my lender paid off in 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm netting right at $300 a month on this thing that I have no money into.
Man, that is strong. And honestly, $4,000 downstroke on a, you know, $60,000, $70,000 house, yeah. I think that's pretty strong, honestly, because that's FHA. I mean, they have the alternative of getting an FHA, or they probably don't. I'm assuming it's like a credit issue or something.
It's a credit issue. It's always a credit issue. It's just, and, you know, on those lower-end houses, banks don't want to finance them.
That's true, yeah.
But yet, in our market, in the Texas market, there's and certainly a whole lot of other markets around the country, there's a strong demand for that product because people want to own a house as opposed mm-hmm. to, generally speaking.
Sure.
And, I mean, there's a subset that will never own, but they have a pride of ownership. And they can put $5,000, $6,000, $7,000 into a house. They're not going to run from that house.
So that's right. Yeah.
Very little foreclosure anymore. Very, very little foreclosure.
Yeah. Do you have a statistic on your owner finance? How many of them you end up having to take back?
I don't track that, but I can tell you since Dodd-Frank was implemented, and we do follow Dodd-Frank guidelines, our foreclosure rates were drastically reduced from probably foreclosing on 40% to maybe 10% now.
Wow, it's not bad. In Texas, I would just imagine it's probably not that hard to get a house back in Texas.
No, it's not. It's a fast state.
Yeah.
But compare that to a rental property. One of the better rental properties we bought recently was we bought it for $55,000 bucks. This house on Karen Lane. It needed foundation, paint, and floors, and so we ended up all in about $62,000 for that house. We rent it for $1,100 a month.
Jeez.
But when you figure in vacancies and repairs,
yeah,
taxes and insurance, I'm only cash flowing $180 a month. So,
that seems low. Your property taxes are a little bit higher in Texas too, though.
Our property taxes are real high here.
Yeah.
But I figure in a 15% vacancy and repair factor, that's not a lot.
Yeah.
Now, if I got rid of my private lender loan and put a 30-year bank loan on there, I would cash flow better, but I want to get them paid off.
Yeah, right.
That's my goal, is to get them paid off.
Yeah. Just out of curiosity, so of your rental portfolio, you said you had about 70, is it 70 rentals or is it it's a mixture of owner financed rentals?
About 50 rentals and 20 owner financed houses.
Okay, gotcha. And most of those, what sort of underlying financing do you have on them?
Everything is private lender. We buy everything with a private lender loan.
Okay. Yeah.
And typically we will take out that private lender. If it's a hold property, we'll take them out in a year to 2 years with a bank, commercial bank loan.
Okay.
And we get really, really good terms on those bank loans, those commercial bank loans. They're great. But obviously, you know the game. Banks don't want to finance the purchase, so we rely very, very heavily on our private lenders for that.
Yeah. So that's a big part of your business. Just out of curiosity, I mean, if you've been working with private lenders for a number of years now, what's sort of the going rate for you at this point?
We're about 8.5 right now is our average.
That's strong. That's really strong.
Yeah. Yeah.
Any points, or that's just flat?
No. Well, if they have an IRA, we will take care of the cost to fund the deal out of the IRA. So if it's like $500, we'll pay.
Man, that's strong. Mm-hmm. There's not a lot of guys in our business that are borrowing at 8% on private money.
Yeah.
So that's kudos to you for putting that together. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's a great setup for us.
So So just sort of an overall business model for you, though, is that you're out there marketing for houses, and depending on what price point maybe you're buying it, is your exit strategy? How do you determine what you're flipping versus owner financing versus renting?
100% correct. I don't want to rent houses in the sub $80,000 market.
Okay.
Because it's just hard to collect
in
those markets for rental properties. For owner finance, it's not hard to collect. But for rental properties, I don't want to deal in that market. So if it's less than 80 grand in San Antonio or the surrounding cities, we're going to sell that with owner financing. If it's between 80 and 120, that's the sweet spot for rental. Great margins and tenants pay and tenants stay. So we have very little maintenance problems with our tenants, because that's a good classification of people to rent to.
Yeah.
But once you get above the 120, the margins start getting out of line. And so we flip anything over 120. If it's a 120 above house, ARV, big demand for buyers, banks like to finance them.
Mm-hmm.
The rental margins get skinnier. And so we love to flip those.
And so in your marketing, are you marketing for anything specifically, or are you just sort of, you got your marketing out there and you get what you get?
I don't market based on the tax value of the property or the market value of the property.
Okay.
So yeah, we get everything. I mean, the cheapest house Ken I ever bought was $2,000.
Oh, jeez.
$2,000 for two different houses. So we get some really, really cheap stuff. But, you know, I bought and flipped $500,000 houses too. So.
Oh, so you get a little bit. That's honestly like us. I mean, you throw your marketing out there and you just sort of see what comes back. And if we're really of the same, similar mindset, except our lower end stuff, we typically wholesale rather than owner finance, because mm-hmm. there's another investor out there that wants to do something with it. And then in the 80 to 120, that's sort of our same thing. We rent, but we turnkey it rather than rent and keep it. Mm-hmm. But you're exactly right. That's a real sweet spot for a strong rental. And then same thing, 120 and up, that's for us, that's very typical to fix and flip those.
Wow.
So very, very similar model.
For a few months and we got this very similar model.
That's very similar model, yeah.
Because it works.
It does work. Yep, absolutely. And it's similar in terms of our markets and price points, but even though we have different strategies where I love the owner finance model. You know, I don't think in Atlanta, I don't think I could get $4,000 downstroke on a $60,000 note. Because even our lease purchases in Atlanta, you know, you're lucky to get $1,500 down on a $100,000 house. More competitive that way for some reason.
I don't know. I don't know what it is. It's who the buyers are or just the mentality of the part of the country. I don't know.
Yeah, sure. Well, demographics are different, and yeah, mentality, cultures are different. I mean, there's lots of different reasons. But it sounds like, I mean, you're in a really good market for that owner finance model. It sounds like attrition rate's only 10% on these low end houses. That's pretty stinking awesome. I'd love to work that model.
Yeah, I love those. The only bad thing about them is that they eventually pay off. So you're left.
That's right. They go away.
But you got to have the rentals, man. You got to have that balance.
That's right. Now it sounds like you've put together a balanced portfolio. I'm curious, what does your marketing look like now? I know you talked about driving for dollars. What do you guys do now to find houses?
Well, we do the non-owner occupied, of course.
Uh huh.
We're doing a probate campaign, which I've got real frustrated with, but maybe it's picking up now. Probates for 4 months with no leads. And then finally, the last week and this week, I have three very strong leads.
Oh, that's good.
I really like the delinquent tax list.
Mm-hmm.
It's a list that I've worked for forever. And historically, that's been my best list.
Huh.
Yeah.
Interesting.
It's hard to get. Any list that's hard to get is going to be a good list.
Absolutely. Nobody else is working it. Do you have to go to your courthouse to get that list?
Two of the three counties I work in, yes.
Okay.
I got to go to the courthouse.
And do you
have one of the counties, which is San Antonio, Bear County.
Uh-huh.
That info I don't have to go online. But then it's a competitive market. You know, I send a postcard to somebody with tax delinquency, and they're getting postcards from three or four other guys.
Yeah.
So it's timing, consistency, and staying in the game.
Yeah. Well, and probate's probably the same thing. I hear so many mixed reviews about the probate list. Some people swear by it and other people can't get a deal off of it. So it just, it must just depend on the market and how much competition there is in that list.
Yeah. Every probate person I've talked to, except one maybe, has had multiple letters.
Yeah, yeah. So other people are working that list for sure.
It's a heavily marketed to list. We just started doing a campaign to the code violations list. Hopefully that's going to be a good one for us.
Oh, very cool. Yeah, I know some guys that do well with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's actually a big list in Bexar County.
Uh-huh. So,
we have done and had success with the over 65 plus list, over 65 with equity.
Okay, yeah.
I'm not doing that campaign right now, but I might pick it up soon.
Uh-huh.
But I like that campaign also.
Yep, that's sort of the empty nester list with equity. That's great. Yeah. Now, I remember the first time you and I met last year, you had talked about, I feel like, didn't you have like a door-hanging campaign or something like that?
Yeah, you know, I like that one too. I tried to start it up again a week ago, but my little door flyer guy bailed on me, but I might have to go back to the expensive company. But yeah, we do a little post-it note. It's a 4x6 post-it note that says, right here. It's an attention homeowner. And then on one side of it, it says notice, attention homeowner.
Very official.
Yeah. And so we go out and put these on doors and have good results with that. It's a little more expensive.
Yeah.
Marketing, but they're good deals. The margins are better and there's no competition.
Nobody else is doing it. Yeah. You basically blanket. You're not targeting specific house. You're targeting neighborhoods, I guess.
Exactly. Targeting neighborhoods. And we spent, I think it was $6,000 last year in getting these things out. And we closed two deals. So it was a little more cost per deal. But again, they were fatter deals.
Yeah.
No other competition.
That's not 3,000 deals. Not horrible if you've got some decent margins. That's not horrible.
What I did like about it, I mean, we'd put 25,000 of these things out at a time, and I'd get six calls, but close two of them.
Wow. So, yeah.
I do like that.
Yeah, that's interesting. So what did it say? Just attention homeowners, and just hey, are you looking to sell your house sort of thing?
Notice, sell your house for top dollar within 9 days, guaranteed.
Okay.
My name's Steve Carlson. I've successfully worked with many families who, for whatever reason, may want to sell, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah. And would you pay per post-it note to like some company that would put them up for you?
Yeah, it's 10 cents if I want to go with somebody else, like a yard guy or something like that. Or if I want to be solo, it's 12 cents a door.
Okay. Oh, I gotcha. You went with me. Interesting business. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it sounds like it works. So what else? I guess you got bandit signs up.
I don't do bandit signs too much. I have done them. I got fined $6,200 by one city one time for putting up bandit signs.
So. What? $6,200? Was that for one sign or for a bunch of signs that went up at the same time?
No, I had a guy put out some bandit signs, and they collected them all.
Oh, and, gosh. So, yeah. And hit you for every one of them.
Uh-huh. Hit me for every single one of them. Fortunately, hired an attorney, and we got the case delayed, and eventually those bandit signs showed up missing. In other words, they lost them.
Oh, my gosh. So, hilarious. So
they had to drop the case.
Oh, my gosh. Well, we learned pretty quick that you don't put a bandit sign inside the city limits of a municipality. It's always better to be like in the unincorporated county area. They seem to ignore them a little bit better.
Yes. Yes, that's true.
Live and learn. That's funny. So tell me about, so this year you guys are doing 25 to 35 fix and flip deals. You guys, mm-hmm. I'm guessing you being in CG, you got big plans to grow that. What's your thoughts around growing the business? What does that look like for you?
Well, actually we're hiring acquisitions people right now. We're hiring support staff.
Awesome.
And we are hiring a general manager. I am such a terrible integrator or implementer of the grand ideas that I have. I've got to find somebody that's able to take my ideas and implement them, because I have too many ideas and I got caught up in the weeds and none of them get done completely. So we're going to double our marketing from, we'll probably be up at $10,000 a month in direct mail here shortly. And and knocked down. My goal is to knock down 50 houses, take down 50 houses this year.
Nice.
Replace some of the rentals that we've had, and of course, generate a bunch of cash.
Yeah. Nice, man. Are you the – so in San Antonio, that's a pretty big market.
It's big and competitive.
It is. Okay. I figured as much. Yeah. Yeah. You're out there competing with all the other guys. I imagine all your major markets in Texas are probably somewhat competitive.
Well, you know, what's popped up around here, I don't know about Atlanta, but there's a lot of corporate – what I call corporate wholesalers. And these corporate guys, big companies will come in and hire 10, 15 acquisitions and sales guys out of college and train them how to buy houses. And
they
have massive budgets and a staff of 20 people. And all they're doing is going locking up houses, putting them under contract, and then selling them to guys like me.
Yep. Net Worth's out of Texas. Do you have Net Worth Realty in your backyard? Yep. They're a big outfit.
Yep, they sure are. I got some friends over at Net Worth.
Yep. It's good and bad because you're competing for the houses, but it's funny because I've bought properties from Net Worth and done really well on them as well. So they do actually bring you deals as well. So it's sort of the two-sided coin.
Yeah, that's true. We bought one from them in, I think it was November, and we're going to buy – hopefully we're trying to buy another one from them now. So.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah, it sounds like your market's probably pretty dang similar to ours in terms of competition and price points and – having other players out there. So you've been at this, man, since 98. I'm sure you've done hundreds of deals. Is there one deal to you that stands out as your best deal ever?
I got several best deals, but the one that was the most amazing to me was a house that was a waterfront house, a lakefront home. We bought this one in, I think it was 2011 or 12. And what it was, a lady had been divorced, and she got the house and was getting behind on taxes, I think. I think this came off a delinquent tax list. So she owned two parcels of land, a vacant lot and a house on the water. Both of them had boat docks, but they were deeded separately. So I said, I'll buy both of these. I'm just going to give you a package price for both the houses. And we bought both of them for $186,000.
Wow.
What was really phenomenal about this is the seller, we negotiated the seller to give her $95,000 cash at closing because she had some payments, back payments she had to make, and she wanted a little extra cash. And then we negotiated a $91,000 second lien to the seller. So we came in and paid her $95,000, but we put a $125,000 private investor loan on the property, a first lien loan for $125,000. So I walk out of closing with $30,000 in my pocket. The seller got $95,000, plus she gave him $91,000 second lien. But that second lien was zero interest for 10 years.
Oh, my gosh. It's like free money. You're just sitting on – free loan, basically.
Exactly. I explained it to her how it works, and she says, "Oh, like an annuity." I said, "Exactly."
Sure, that's what you need to hear. It's an annuity.
Exactly. Exactly like an annuity. So we had a 9% first lien loan on that property. We paid $937 a month on it. And this is a beautiful waterfront home, not real large, but real pretty. It needed some work. We probably put $15,000 worth of work into it. Needed some foundation work and some other things. But it was such great financing. I wanted to move there because it was three houses down from the house I grew up in as a kid.
Oh, wow. That's cool. That changes things. Yeah.
The house I grew up in was not nearly as nice. It wasn't on the water. We were kind of poor. We were very poor, actually. But but this house was relatively new, too, and just right down the street. So I tried to get my wife to move back in there, but she didn't want to move in there with me. So she eventually convinced me to sell this thing. But in the meantime, we rented it out for $1,900 a month.
So. Oh, my gosh. $1,900 a month. And your net was $900 and something?
Yeah, my debt was $937 a month. Taxes and insurance, taxes were kind of high. Insurance wasn't too bad. So, yeah, we still cash flowed $500-$600 a month on that house for 3 years.
Okay.
I decided to sell it. So I called up the seller. I said, "Hey, Miss Seller, the previous owner, I said, you know, we got this 0% loan hanging out there for another 7-8 years, whatever the term was. I said, I can pay you off at a discount, or we can move that loan to another house. And she said, well, what's the discount? And I said, well, I'll pay you $70,000 now. Actually, I think I said 65 now, or we can move the loan to another house. She negotiated me up to $70,000. So we ended up buying this house, 165. We sold the house for $350,000.
Oh, my gosh. So you ended up buying, when it was all said and done, you only ended up paying $165,000 for the house?
Yeah, because we negotiated that $91,000 second down to
$70,000. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. And then just turn around, after you'd rented it for 3 years and cash flowed it, yeah, $500 a month, 3 years later you sell it for $350,000.
Yeah, long-term capital gains, so that was nice. Didn't pay a lot of taxes.
Yeah. How did you find the house?
I hate to tell you, because he might be listening to this podcast, but a friend of mine gave me the lead. I paid him $500 for the lead, and I bet you anything he ends up listening to this podcast.
Hilarious.
He's going to shoot me.
He's going to send you an invoice for half of that. Yeah. Minus his $500. Crazy, man. I love those types of deals.
Especially, oh, yeah.
Because it's not, I mean, there's a lot of different moving parts in this one. I mean, you got the seller held second. Rented it for a while, and you negotiate it down. Actually, but the talk of an exchange, you know, exchanging the debt on it, which would have been pretty cool. That's super creative.
I've tried to do that. Yeah. Another 3 years or another 7 years at zero payments on a rent house of mine would have been great.
Yeah. Move it somewhere else. That'd have been amazing. But instead you flip it and geez, killer deal, man. I love that.
Yeah, it was a fun deal.
So people are listening, thinking, okay, this Steve Carlson knows what the heck he's doing in San Antonio. Where would we steer them to if they were interested in getting in contact with you?
Well, my phone number is 210-363-4620, or they can go check out my website. I've got a couple of them. There's SA, as in San Antonio, so SAREALESTATEDEALS.com.
Okay.
I kind of did a white paper on what my business model is, and they can go down to the bottom of that first page of that site and get a free copy of that white paper.
Oh, perfect. Cool.
Yeah. And I'm not selling anything, so I've got no reason to spam you or anything. I don't have a marketing business, but,
so no strings attached. No strings attached. Yeah, there you go. It's SAREALESTATEDEALS.com. Cool.
Yep. Or my regular website, my buying website is solutionhousebuyers.com. If you're interested, if any of your listeners are interested in learning about private lending and what it might do for them, they can go to my private lending site, which is consistentreturns.com.
Oh, perfect. Consistent Return. So we'll put all three of these websites up on our show notes as well. SAREALESTATEDEALS.com, SolutionHouseBuyers.com, and then ConsistentReturns.com as well. And the white paper for your is there any chance you could send us the white paper? We could put it up on our site and people could download it?
Yeah, I sure can.
That'd be awesome. So we'll put that in our show notes for this podcast as well. Steve, this was awesome, man. Thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah, Ken, always good visit with you. You're a great guy, man.
You as well. Take care, buddy.
Yeah, you too. Bye-bye.
Hey, Deal Farm Podcast listeners, this is Ken Corsini with a very special offer. I'm giving you an opportunity to work with my company, Georgia Residential Partners, and buy turnkey cash flowing properties in Atlanta for less than you've ever bought them at before. Where before we would sell properties that have already been fixed up with a markup in place, we're going to be selling properties at wholesale prices, the original wholesale prices. So instead of selling you a $70,000 house, we're going to sell you a $45,000 house. We're going to provide the hard money, the contractors, the tenant placement, the permanent financing, the insurance, everything you need to get into this house. And again, many of these properties are going to be sold $10,000 to $15,000 less than what you would have paid for them otherwise. That means you get to recognize equity right out of the gates and bring less money to the table on your permanent refi. If this is of interest to you, reach out to me at ken@gainvesting.com. Look forward to hearing from you.